Having a little fun there, because I tell you what, it's April 28th. Yep. 2011. Washington, D.C., planet Earth, third planet from the sun. And I was going to lead off the show talking about why Barack Obama will not be reelected president of the United States, and it was going to be really good. But I just got some news in my mailbox. Apparently, there's been some digging going on. A lot of digging going on into Barack Obama's background. It seems that Donald Trump has let the genie out of the bottle. Let the cat out of the bag. And now folks are wondering, who is this guy that we elected president of the United States? Because you know what? When Bill Clinton ran for presidency, there were all sorts of things that came out about him that and most of the things that came out about his time in his early years in as a student in politics and all that stuff, all of it came out well before we elected him president. And I got to admit that I voted for Bill Clinton. Yes, I did, over George Sr. A lot of information came out about George Bush, the president before Barack Obama. The fact that he was a C student and, you know, all this information came out, but not until this president has information come out during a time when he's about to run for re-election. Now all of a sudden everybody's wondering, well, who is this guy? Who is this guy that is responsible? Yes, I did. You know, it's all about being fair and balanced, GDT, and I had to go ahead and admit it so that my admitting it will somehow bring us closer together and serve a greater purpose so that, you know, the words that I say will have some gravitas in the end when you know that I'm being completely candid and honest about the things I say. Well, not always, but at least right now. So the stuff is coming out. It's all coming out. Freedom Wings, GDT, and hey, where is he? Tau Killer's in here, and some folks who are listening on their computers, I suppose, the guests that are there. Hey, information is coming out. A slippery character. President Obama's father was a serial womanizer, hence the Papa was a Rolling Stones intro bumper music. Apparently, their folks are getting into his past. They're digging, and they're digging deep. I did not know that President Obama's daddy was a serial womanizer. Did you? Do we really care? No. We don't, but hey, it's juicy, and you gotta love it. Who had to be warned to stop his playboy ways? Obama, raised by his grandparents and single mother, documents relating to his father paint a picture of a serial womanizer who officials were trying to force out of the country. With a father like this, it's little wonder President Obama did not want to release his full birth certificate. Although the proof that he was actually born in Hawaii may silence some critics, a new and interesting side of his life has emerged. That his father, Barack Obama Sr., was a serial womanizer and polygamist who government and university officials were trying to force out of the country. No, we don't. We don't really. It's not that big of a deal. It's just juicy gossip. You know what? Hey, let me tell you something right now. I am my father's son. There is no doubt about that. I can't escape it. And, you know, now that I've lost a few pounds, when I look in the mirror, I actually see my father's face, which is not all that comforting to me. Now, as it turns out, Obama Sr. married Stanley Ann Dunham, a white student from Kansas, not only when he was said to have already been married to a woman in Kenya, but at the time when interracial marriages were still illegal in many parts of the United States. Documents obtained from the U.S. Immigration Service paint a picture of a man who had an eye for the ladies. And he is not at all attractive. And, yeah. And according to his file, had to be warned several times to stay away from girls at the university. So right now I'm looking at all kinds of pictures of him and his daddy and Barack and all that. And I just thought I'd go ahead and leave with that. Because it's interesting. It was really interesting to me to come across it at this stage, because I was going to start talking about how even Captain America is leaving the country. Now, America has really gone down the tubes under this administration. When you have the Captain himself, Superman. When you have Superman himself saying that he is renouncing his citizenship. Superman himself no longer wants to be a citizen of the United States of America, mostly because I think we're going broke and we're going down the tube, so he's kind of looking for a new country. We're getting into Obama's Tau Killer, right? So we're getting into Obama's father's sex life. No, honestly, Tau Killer, I don't really give a damn about Obama's father and what he's done. I just thought it was something humorous to throw out there and put the pot and have a reason to play the Papa was a Rolling Stone bumper music and, you know, that kind of thing. Honestly, I don't care, and I don't think many other people will care either. But it's just interesting. What I do find interesting, though, is that folks are starting to really get into this guy's past. Folks are really starting to try to find out who he is, which I believe is a good thing, because, as you know, this same thing went down with Bill Clinton when he was running for president. You know, how his father had left and how his mama raised him all on her own, and, you know, that whole thing. So it all went down pretty much the same way with Bill Clinton. So why not with Barack Obama? Why not? It's about time that we started getting some information about this phantom person, the chosen one. The chosen, our chosen leader, the anointed one, the most high. But now let's move on to something more substantive. And I like saying that word, even though I have trouble getting it out from time to time. Earlier this week, race reared its ugly head. Of course, whenever black folks feel they have to actually, show some bona fides, actually have to produce something, actually have to do their jobs, and they don't, and they're called out about it, oftentimes black folks will cry racism. It's racist. Oh, no, not that I suck all to be damned. No. Let's take this for example. President Obama will not be reelected, period. Well, why? Well, milk. A gallon of skim milk at the local Giant in central Pennsylvania in January 11, 2011 was $3.20. February 28, 2011, $3.24. March 6, 2011, $3.34. April 23rd, 2011, $3.48. That would be a 28 cent rise in a mere 102 days from January to April of this year. The third year of Obama's misadventure as President of the United States. Then there's the celery. Same size, same bag, same store. January 11, 2011, $1.99 a bag. March 6, 2011, $2.49 a bag. A rise of 50 cents in just 54 days. And the gas prices during the administration, filled with those who think drill, baby, drill is so yesterday, as one internet photo had it. The number of regular, premium, and diesel were replaced with LOL, OMG, and WTF. Thus be it to governments who seem not to understand that energy is what makes the economy, makes the economic engine, and our cars hum. What does this mean? It means that Barack Obama is not going to be reelected president of the United States, period. Now, I find it ironic that so many people think that Glenn Beck is such a nut and such a conspiracy theorist and a racist, because Glenn called this out almost a year ago. Glenn said this was going to happen nearly a year ago, and folks were calling him insane, a loony bird, a drunkard, a fear-mongering crazy man. But he called it, didn't he? He called it. Guests can call in at 347-884-8500. And for those of you on a budget, as we all soon will be, 877-666-9305. All right, let's talk about it. Neither Rush Limbaugh nor a guy whom I'm very close to, R. Emmett Terrell, as far as I know, shop for groceries at our local Publix, Piggly Wiggly, or Kroger. Hopefully, they may have created jobs where someone else down in South Florida can go and do it for them. No, he is no more crazy as Alex Jones, and I love Alex. I think Alex is right on. And so is Glenn Beck, apparently, because his words have been borne out. What he has said was going to happen with the price of fuel, the price of oil, the price of groceries, our everyday groceries, what he said actually happened. Nobody's talking about it. Nobody's saying that, hey, you know what, Glenn, you were right. Now, President Obama's approval numbers in a state he carried by over 10 points in 2008 has him with a disapproval rating of 52% and within the margin of error with three potential Republican presidential candidates. Obama is basically tied in the state with Mitt Romney, who he trails 43% to 42%, Mike Huckabee, who leads 45% to 44%, and Rick Santorum, who leads 45% to 43%. Barack Obama is losing support, and the reason why he's losing support is because he hasn't brought jobs. He is attempting to force us into this whole pie-in-the-sky green energy deal by raising, creating an atmosphere where we have no choice but to agree to his policies. Because it's he who has stopped the drilling, who has posed military moratoriums on drilling in the Gulf. It's Obama who has created an atmosphere where high gas prices have skyrocketed. What is it that he said during his campaign? Under his plan of cap and trade, gas prices would necessarily skyrocket. Yes, he said that in addition to electricity would necessarily skyrocket. You see, Barack Obama has no problem at all with us going broke, me and you, if it fits his agenda. And his agenda is to force us to do what he thinks is best for us. And what he thinks is best for us is to buy cars that run by electricity and to stop using so much electricity in our homes and to not use any salt in our food and eat less portions and breathe less air and use really funny looking squiggly light bulbs instead of the ones that we grew up with in our homes so many comforting years ago when the world was much simpler and far less expensive. What is it that you can't believe, Tile Killer? You're welcome to call in and talk about it. You call in and tell me what you can't believe, because it's all so true. It's right in your face. I know you go grocery shopping. I know you shop for groceries. I know you go to the store. Hey, I lost a lot of weight. And you know how I did it? I eat a lot of Yoplait yogurt. Well, hey, I went into my local Walmart as I often do to get my whole cart full of yogurt. And you know, just a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3-4 weeks ago, yogurt was 40 cents, Yoplait yogurt. Then it crept up to 50. And then to 55. And now it's 59 cents per little carton. That's the highest price it's ever been. And I know that's just one example. But Glenn Beck was right. Start stocking up. Get your house in order. Plant a garden. Get yourself some gold, because we are just about done. If we don't get rid of this guy in 2012, and I don't even know if that's going to be soon enough. I don't know if it's going to even help. If Barack Obama is not reelected and we don't get a strong president in office, we are done. We are done, folks. And you know what? Glenn Beck called it. He said so. And here we are, dilly-dallying around, trying to give this guy a chance, and he doesn't give a damn. What was it he said the other day? We are living in serious times. We're living in a time where this calls for serious folks and serious and seriousness. And then he goes off to Oprah's show and cracks jokes all day. And how much did all that cost? How much did it cost? It cost a pretty penny, I can tell you that right now. And now, because people and because people are complaining, there are folks out there crying racism. Hey, we have a caller. Talk about it. You're on the C. Robert Jones Conservative Radio Report. What do you have to say about the subject?
Yeah, this is my name is John. I'm calling from Philadelphia.
John.
What I have to say about it is, you know, I think that he is identical in his viewpoints probably to his father. I see in your show description you're talking about his father, and in the sense that his father was Islamic during a lot of his early life, and then eventually he became agnostic, and he kind of believed in socialism towards his latter life, and I think that the son is following the same script. And as far as his father's character is concerned, you know, I think that in his father's life, according to what his biography says, is he was married three times, and he basically abandoned his son with the wife he had from Kansas. And he was older than she was. And I think that says a lot about, you know, his character. It was in the sense that he preferred to pursue his career rather than try to take care of the family that he had made here in America. So once he was able to get accepted to Harvard for a master's program, instead of staying in Hawaii and trying to take care of that family, he went back up to Boston and got his degree and then left and went back to Africa. And he didn't see that family ever again. And I think that the president has said that it was his mother and his mother's family which helped shape him as an individual. And I think one of the early influences was this Frank Marshall Davis, in the sense that he reintroduced him to these concepts of socialism and communism from an early age. And it was this Khalid Al-Mansour, who is a Howard University and Harvard University trained attorney, who is very close friends with the Prince of Saudi Arabia. And I think it was stated that the Prince of Saudi Arabia helped to bankroll a lot of Obama's early expenses in terms of him, his expenses when he was in school, both in college and in law school. That's the reason why you don't see a job record there.
Yeah.
Because he was being bankrolled by people in Saudi Arabia. And it was through this Dr. Al-Mansour that he was helping to finance Obama's education. And also what came up with a Pastor Manning, he had a trial dealing with this, and he was able to get information that Obama may have worked as a CIA agent in Afghanistan because he was fluent in some of the Arabic languages. And I think he can speak the Indonesian language fluently. But he also knows some of the Arabic languages as well. And he was able to go over to Afghanistan and work in the fight with the Taliban. Like at that time, I believe the Taliban was just forming, and the people of Afghanistan were trying to fight the Soviet Union. So he was instrumental in the formation of the Taliban. Because I believe the Taliban was like a student-run type militia where they were trying to fight the Soviet Union. But he was instrumental in the formation of that. And because of his role in that, he was given a degree from a Ivy League school. And with that degree, he was able to leverage that to get into Harvard Law School with a letter from Percy Sutton. And a letter, Percy Sutton was a well-known politician up in New York, with a letter from Percy Sutton and a letter from this Dr. Al Mansour.
I'm sorry to interrupt, John. Do you have anything to back that up? Do you research? Where did you get this information?
Well, this is, I got some of it from the Obama Nation book, Dr. Jerome Corsi, and then some of the other books that have come out, and then there is things like on YouTube that where they talk about the connection between Khalid Al-Mansour and Obama and Percy Sutton and Obama.
Yep, so, that's what I wanted to get out of you, because I have it from the same book, the Obama Nation by Dr. Corsi. Go on then.
From this connection between Saudi Arabia is in the sense that the Saudi Arabians have donated a lot of money to the endowment of Harvard University. So this prince from Saudi Arabia, he has given Harvard University close to $1 billion. So with his influence and with the influence of this Dr. Al Mansour, who happens to be an African American who is also a Muslim, but he has very close ties to the people in Saudi Arabia. He was able to get Obama in to Harvard Law, and then because of Obama's personality and so forth and his charisma, he was able to become the president of the Law Review. But yet he was able to retain that position without writing any Law Review articles. So there might have been influence from the Saudi Arabian prince to place him in that position on the Law Review, because this prince has given billions of dollars to Harvard University.
Why do you think this information is just now coming to light after all this time, or has it always been out there and folks have just decided that they were going to go ahead and ignore it and not really... And it didn't really matter. You know, kind of like when Bill Clinton, all this information about Bill Clinton being a womanizer, about how he's corning women in hotel rooms and all that, and folks were dismissing it. They were calling it the bimbo eruptions, and they were saying that, you know, it didn't really matter. It wouldn't have any effect on how he governed and how he did his job as president. And as it turns out, you know, later on in Clinton's tenure as president, these things started coming out, and in fact, he acted on some of the things that people were concerned about. So, but why do you think these things are coming out right now?
Well, I think people really don't research these candidates. They really don't know a lot about them. It's more about the way they appeal to the public. And then people look at who their opposition is, and if their opposition is not strong against them, then they go with the person that has the most charisma, the most personality. And Obama is able to deliver him; he's able to present himself very well. And I think that his timing was perfect, because it was the 40th anniversary of the assassination of Martin Luther King. And I think that the Caucasian population, who was liberal, they were examining where the black population in the country was at this 40th anniversary of the assassination of Dr. King. And the black population had not made that much progress.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it was a sense that, well, look, we got this competent black man. He's been to the Ivy League. He speaks well. He's written this bestseller book, which is very well written. He's very intelligent. And we don't like Hillary because Hillary has a lot of baggage. And we don't like McCain because McCain is too old. So,
yeah.
You know, he was the choice. You know, and
How do you think this will affect the upcoming presidential race? The information that's coming out, even the trivial information, which I do agree with Childkiller when he suggests that you know, these things about Barack's dad being a womanizer are trivial and shouldn't be our concern. I do agree with Childkiller to a certain extent, but Childkiller also has to probably would want to agree that we are our father's sons, we are a product of our parenting to a certain extent. But how do you think this is all going to play out in the upcoming election?
Well, just as a person, a voter, and I watched the Republican convention and the Democratic convention, and one thing as a person that has lived in an urban setting, and I understand minority people to a certain degree, the Republicans do not do outreach to the minority communities, especially the Black and Hispanic communities.
Yeah.
And when they look at the convention, they don't see a well kind of representation of people from different walks of life inside the Republican convention. And that really affects how they vote. And
yeah.
then a lot of the minorities live in urban areas, and most of the politicians are of the Democratic Party. So there's this sense that the Republican Party is for, you know, wealthy white men. That's the feeling among a lot of people. So therefore, they don't vote for the Republican. And like I said, people really don't pay close attention to what the issues are. They're more absorbed into their own thing, unless they are the type to actually read and like research these things. So, you know, they go with the candidate that is usually of the Democratic Party, because when they look at the Democratic convention, they see lots of different types of faces inside the Democratic convention. They don't see that inside the Republican convention. So I think that the Republican Party has to put up more of a moderate type candidate, of a candidate for today, and they have to do a better job of trying to do outreach into these minority communities, because of the way that the population is going. Over 80% of the new Americans, according to the last census, which was 2010, over 80% of them are immigrants of color that have come into the country, whether that be Hispanic or Asian, or, you know, people from the Middle East or whatever. The population has grown only 20% through natural childbirth.
Right. Hold on a minute. Let me go ahead and play this clip, and then you hang on, and I want to get your thoughts after it's over.
But we don't have a one issue. We have the fact that we have one problem in this country. They still don't want to deal with our race. That's our issue. And as long as we're Black, we're going to have to deal with a multiplicity of issues.
You have to get into the construction business. You look on these streets, you look at these buildings going up, you see everybody working but us. And they're working in our community. The question has to be, if we don't work, nobody can work. If you're talking about activism, when you see these jobs and there are no Black people on it, get together and shut them down. But the one point I wanted to make about the education is that we as a people have to begin to understand we cannot turn our children over to somebody else for them to educate them. We have to take responsibility for doing that in many ways. Reading to them in the morning, getting the church to be involved. But we as parents, we as neighbors, we as brothers and sisters and uncles have got to say, I will not turn my children over to another class of people to educate, because many times they come back hating me.
I know some of you. It shows that President Barack Obama's approval rating among African Americans has dropped. Now, it's at 85%, still higher than that of any other group. But what does that say? Here we are a year out from the election, and the approval rating among African Americans has decreased.
One, we've got to see if we believe all the polls. Let's start there. Because
we believed it when it was high.
No, we believed it when we voted high, and it was clear that the polls were reflecting the vote. So I think that what the media has tried to do is to have this black-on-black fight with the black community and President Obama. Like President Obama said at this convention, we don't agree with him on everything. We're not the national, as he said, satisfaction network. We're National Action Network. But we also understand that a lot of the standards that they're putting on him,
Al Sharpton,
the standards they've never put on any other president, including some black leaders who have held him to a higher standard than some of the white presidents, including Bill Clinton, they call black. And I think that we must hold the president accountable, but we must not have a double standard and put on this president what we never put on any other president. And I think that that is why I question the polls.
Okay, this comes from Doug Reed in New York. Ever since President Obama was elected, we've seen a rise in protests, blatant disrespect for the presidential office, and just plain racism from people who oppose him. When are the people of color going to form a political party to counter the Tea Party? And would anyone on the panel be willing to lead it?
Tipping people's anger, racism, all those things are mixed into what I believe happened with the Tea Party. But at the end of the day, for us, we need, I think what happened in Wisconsin recently shows us what we can do when we decide to come together. We were with labor and with civil rights. We come together, we get...
All right, okay. That's going on a little bit long. Citizen, are you still here, John?
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about all that?
Well, you know, Sharpton and Jackson have made a lot of money over the years by, you know, in their sense of protesting. And Sharpton is a multimillionaire, and so is Jesse Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
So Jesse Jackson and Sharpton are near retirement age now, so... You know, Obama holds the throne as far as leadership is concerned, but what Cornel West stated in the argument that he had with Sharpton is that Obama's not reaching out to the working poor and trying to create any type of jobs program. He had an argument with Sharpton on MSNBC.
Yep.
And I think that's the problem is that some of the people that are the grassroots people are not seeing an effort from the Obama administration to really deal with the issues of the poor.
Mm-hmm.
And it's more of he's bailing out these investment banks and investing in GM and so forth, but there's not an effort to really narrow the gap with the people that are disadvantaged. And I think that that's an issue for the future because as the economy changes, it requires a higher level of skill, and the poor are the ones that are going to be most challenged to try to better their skills in terms of in the educational arena, because they don't have the money to really attend certain schools unless they can get a lot of financial aid, and if the economy doesn't improve and financial aid and these other programs are cut, they're going to be hard-pressed to try to advance in this new economy.
Well, you know what I'm getting from this whole thing is that if you don't agree with the president, if you have fundamental issues with the president's policies, even though you can like him personally, and a lot of people do, if you have issues with his policy – then you're a racist. And now you have black people, some prominent black people on this panel who are advocating if they don't get a job, then working on the construction site, whether they've earned that job or not, then the construction site should be shut down so that nobody works. And, you know, these types of this way of thinking is not only unproductive, but it's dangerous. And it's one of the reasons why this country, in my opinion, is pretty much falling apart is because you have people who think that certain groups of people, and indeed people in general, who believe that they are owed something for nothing, that they should be given instead of something instead of earning it. There seems to be very little honor. You know, like back in the old days, I've often said that men today are not nearly as honorable and as tough as men were back in the 30s, 40s, and even in the 50s, when there was, in my opinion, much more a sense of honor, and in that you earned, you only wanted something if you earned it.
Yeah.
And you didn't want a handout. You didn't want something given to you without earning it. And if somebody said, hey, you can have this, take this. I have heard, you know, older men back when I was a kid say, you know, no, thank you. You know, if I can't work for it, I'd rather not have it. And now it's no longer like that. It's every man for himself, and everybody wants something for nothing. And this panel simply speaks. That when I listened to the whole thing, that's all I heard was people asking or demanding something for nothing.
Well, I think that that's the subpopulace of the minority community today, namely among native-born African Americans that live in large cities. You have a subpopulace of them, which believe in that handout type mentality, but that is not indicative of the majority of people that are people of color. I think you have many hardworking people who are people of color in the country today who would not be classified as being Caucasian people. And,
yeah.
and they come from Haiti, they come from Jamaica, they come from, you know, South America. They come from Mexico. So I think you have a lot of very hardworking people that are in the population today that want a better opportunity. If they can't get it, they want to see that their children get it. So I don't think that's a prevalent mentality like going into the future. I think the problem will be is that people who are at the lower end of the wage spectrum are going to have difficulty trying to educate their children so that their children will be able to compete in this new economy. And I think this documentary that came out last year where, you know, like I think it was called like some type of Waiting for Superman.
Yeah,
where, you know, they address the public educational system in the sense that how it's failing so many people. And you have, I think it was shot up in New York, in Harlem, New York, where
mm-hmm.
people have to wait in a lottery, like the same way we have lottery here on television. They have to wait in a lottery to see if their children can get selected to go to a charter school. That's how messed up the system has become. Because
yeah.
in any urban setting, you only have like four secondary schools in the entire population of schools that do an adequate job of preparing children to go into higher education. So the
yeah.
parents have to fight and claw to try to get their children in the right track of schools, so that their children can be prepared to go to college.
You know, John, let me just jump in here for a minute. One of the things that you mentioned earlier on, about a minute and a half ago, was that you have a section of the black population that doesn't feel like they need to that doesn't want handouts, to who wants to work for what they get and earn their keep and earn their way. And you know what? But what are all those people that you mentioned have in common? The people that you mentioned come from relatively poor countries, poor nations. Jamaica is not a wealthy country. Haiti is not a wealthy country. I spent some time in Haiti. My former wife is Haitian. Mexico, not a very rich country in much of the areas. And it seems to me that and when you said that, it dawns on me that if you come from a poor country, you're used to working for what you get. There are no handouts. There is no free ride. So those people have to, you know, it's ingrained in them to work for whatever they get. And then when they come here to the United States, you know, the whole idea of getting something for free is foreign to them. Getting something for doing absolutely nothing is foreign to them, and you're absolutely right about that, because I know so many people who come from these countries, the ones that you listed, who will not accept anything unless they work for it and earn it. Go on.
Yeah, well, that's definitely true. You know, people that come from the Caribbean have a much better work ethic, and they usually do much better in the educational arena as well. But I think that because the country is becoming more diverse, you're seeing more of these immigrants of color in the populace. So I don't think these stereotypes are going to hold forever, because like you said, they come from countries that are very poor, and they're used to hard work. And if they are given the right opportunity, they will be able to excel at the same pace as any other race. You also see in the populace people that come from the poor Asian countries, such as the Philippines, Vietnam, Cambodia. They try to compete just as well as the Japanese or the Chinese. So, in a lot of cases, their income levels are very comparable to very low-income African-Americans, but they have a greater incentive to excel educationally. So I think that as time goes on, you'll see more and more of these people in the populace, and these stereotypes about race and being lazy and not really applying yourself and not being intelligent. I think as the populace gets more diverse and you see more and more of these people here, you know, these stereotypes are going to wane somewhat.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, you're absolutely right. I just wonder, you know, right now if what we're seeing, you know, just to change up a little bit, if what we're seeing coming out about the president, all these new revelations, yeah, I tell you what, as I said yesterday, I have the new book by Dr. Corsi. I have it right here. It came in the mail yesterday, FedEx to me from his office. I haven't really had a chance to go into it, but the stuff I have read is devastating, if it is in fact true. And unfortunately for the Obama administration, Corsi's books have been known to be, I would say, near completely factual. He has a track record of laying it out there. Much like Bob Woodward, hardly anyone questions Bob Woodward's books when he goes in and goes in depth and gets the scoop. Nobody questions him. So far, not many folks have questioned Corsi, and the information that I've read in this new book is devastating to the Obama administration. If in fact folks will listen to it, I tell you what, you gotta go ahead and get that book. I mean, I don't have a stake in it. I don't get anything from it, but in addition to the devastation that this book will cause, the economy is out of line, and this guy just doesn't seem to really care. I mean, am I reading this wrong?
Well, yeah. I mean, the gas is up to $4 now, and like I had said before, if gas hits $6, $7, I think, you know, trucking would shut down. That means that the diesel would be at $9. And I don't see how these trucking companies could stay open. And if the trucking is not able to be happening, then I don't see how the retail can stay open, because they have to make inventory every week. They have to have, like, new shipments coming in. So
yeah.
I think the economy is very fragile right now. And if, you know, the food prices are going up, then I don't know. I think that internationally, Obama does not appear to be a strong person internationally, because I don't think that other world leaders see him as a person with a lot of experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally believe that the first African-American president should have come from the military. That's my own personal belief.
Yeah.
Because, and I think it should have come out of the Republican Party, because then the conservative people who are Caucasian in the country would not have the ability to say, well, this is a black individual, he's a liberal, and he wouldn't have that tag on him. And that tag of liberal and being black has been present for a long time. So if you came from the conservative party, you would be seen by conservative people as just being an intelligent, upstanding individual, because they had voted for him. And
mm-hmm.
then I think that eventually the liberal Democrats who were African-American would come along and support him, because really, internally, the African-American community, in a lot of ways, is very conservative.
Why Tal Killer asked in the chat room, why is the economy so jacked up? Why is the economy in such bad shape? What do you think?
Well, I think that right now, I think that there's an oil crisis in the world. I think that the oil reserves are not as great as what we were told, and OPEC is basically like in the process of trying to manipulate the oil prices. And I think that currently it is a real debate among the emerging markets like Russia, Brazil, India,
mm-hmm.
China, whether to take the dollar off as the reserve currency.
Yeah.
You know, with the because America is not seen as being able to grow economically, whereas these other markets are growing at a much more rapid pace. So
yeah.
I think that America is in kind of at a crossroads right now, because its manufacturing is leaving, a lot of the jobs are leaving, and that is because these corporations can do the job much cheaper overseas.
And they can do the job much cheaper overseas. For why? Why is that?
Because in China, they have close to 2 billion people. They have still millions living in poverty. And they can pay wages at a much lower level than they could here. If they came here, they have to deal with the labor union. They have to deal with benefit packages.
Yep.
They have to deal with any type of collective bargaining and all that type of stuff. So that's why they don't want to come here. So that's
and it's
why
no
all their operations over there.
And it's so ironic. I'm sitting here in front of all sorts of electronic gadgetry, and almost all of it, I would say 99% of all this stuff I'm sitting in, when I'm sitting in my little man cave here, my lair, my radio room, my office, all of it, is made in China. Not a single thing in here is made in the U.S., and that is unfortunate. Well, wait a minute now. I have a desk here, a nice, fine wooden desk that I got when I was working for the Chicago Defender, and it was put in storage, and once they decided they were going to move their operations from one location to another, they put a lot of stuff on sale. So I have a really fine wooden desk here, and I would probably guess that this is probably the only thing that I have in this room that was actually made here in the United States of America. Everything else is made in China. And I believe the reason why it is made in China, most of it, because our tax rate is so damn high. And like you said, the labor unions and all the stuff that needs, all the hoops that a company needs to jump through in order to do business here in the United States is virtually non-existent in other countries. And any corporation, any company head, any CEO, any manager would be a fool to go through all that's required to go through to run a business here in the United States if they can do the same thing in another country and make massive profits from it. And I don't have a problem with that at all. I think the United States of America should lower this astronomical tax base, this astronomical tax rate, down to an acceptable level. And companies will come back. America will be a lot stronger. But hey, we're not living in those times right now.
No, and also America has not made a real investment in terms of education for its native populace.
There's no value.
Go ahead.
And that's why you see a lot of the outsourcing of jobs such as engineers, people involved in computer science, people in IT and information technology, because they don't have the numbers of people that are educated in those areas. They can't fill those jobs. So they have to go to India and China to recruit people to come over here and actually do those jobs.
Yeah. That's exactly right. Hey, I just want to get to one more thing, then we're going to wrap it up. Thanks for calling in, American Citizen. John, I really do appreciate it, man. You helped make the show interesting with your insights, and I really do hope that you'll come back tomorrow and talk some more. I do appreciate you calling in. I just want to get to this one little speech here, because it plays into, you know, what Obama said yesterday about his birth certificate, and I think that Obama pretty much stole this speech. He was probably sitting at home the other night with his hideous-looking wife, Michelle, a horrible-looking woman, and they were sitting together in the sack. Picture that, if you will. A teleprompter on one side of the bed, a bedpost, and a teleprompter on the other side, and he's using it to actually have a conversation with her. But right in the middle of all that is this going on television right now.
There's no value in this kind of character debate. Arthur?
Robin, will the president ever respond to Senator Rumson's question about being a member of the American Civil Liberties Union?
Yes, he will. Good morning. It's all right. Please keep your seats. Good morning.
For the last couple of months, Senator Rumson has suggested that being president of this country was to a certain extent about character. And although I've not been willing to engage in his attacks on me, I've been here 3 years and 3 days. And I can tell you without hesitation, being president of this country is entirely about character. For the record, yes, I am a card-carrying member of the ACLU. But the more important question is, why aren't you, Bob? Now, this is an organization whose sole purpose is to defend the Bill of Rights. So it naturally begs the question, why would a senator, his party's most powerful spokesman and a candidate for president, choose to reject upholding the Constitution? Now, if you can answer that question, folks, then you're smarter than I am, because I didn't understand it until a few hours ago. America isn't easy. America is advanced citizenship. You've got to want it bad, because it's going to put up a fight. It's going to say, you want free speech? Let's see you acknowledge a man whose words make your blood boil, who's standing center stage and advocating at the top of his lungs that which you would spend a life. And you call her a whore.
All right. You had to move it up a little bit because you're running out of time.
I've loved two women in my life. I lost one to cancer.
Here we go.
...it out and writing a law that makes sense. You cannot
these times,
crime prevention without
the serious times,
weapons and handguns.
Calls for serious folks.
National security,
no carnival barkers.
Door to door if I have to,
no sideshows.
I'm, Americans that I'm, right,
I'm Barack and I'm Hussein Obama, and I am the President of the United States.
We've got serious problems, and we need serious people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to talk about character, Bob, you better come at me with more than a burning flag and a membership card. If you want to talk about character and American values, fine. Just tell me where and when, and I'll show up. This is a time for serious people, Bob, and your 15 minutes are up.
Oh.
My name is Andrew Shepherd, and I am the president.
Barack Obama stole that. He stole that almost word for word. All right, thank you all so much. I'm sorry for the glitches in the audio. Thank you so much for calling. Thank everybody for being here. I really do appreciate it. Have a wonderful night, and we'll talk again. All right.